Death's particular sphere of operations is, well, not a sphere at all, actually, but the disc world, which is flat, and which rides on the backs of four giant elephants who stand on the shell of the enormous star turtle Great Achuin. Sculling through the deeps of space, his mighty carapace scarred by comets and pitted by meteors.
Welcome to Kerberos Productions' intermittent podcast about our current works in progress, the video game biz in general, to anything that tickles our fancy in those spare moments between progressing and our work. Welcome to Curbstop. All right, welcome to the fourth Kerberos Curbstop podcast.
Four, count them. Four.
Count them. Four.
That's two more than two.
Four.
I'm here with
Martin Serlis.
And
Aaron Dembo.
And I'm Chris Stewart, producer here at Kerberos Productions. Let's jump right in. What's going on at Kerberos?
Kerberos News! Kerberos News! This is where we talk about all things that are news at Kerberos.
So many things are going on at Kerberos.
Yeah, actually, I don't even know how much we'll talk about it just because, oh God, things are busy!
Busy!
This is, by definition, crunch time.
Yep.
Which all projects have. It's just unavoidable.
To the residents of Anchorage, Wellington, and Albuquerque, I am apologizing now for how many times I've wiped your cities out and burnt them to the ground over the past week. I apologize.
There's a lot of the crunch time dev production work going on and a lot of playtesting going on. And yeah, I think we've all devastated a lot of different cities, but those three are the big... playtest
cities.
They're
the starter ones, yeah. The tier one cities.
I will never forget the first time that I got to attack Albuquerque. It's
like, who doesn't?
Are you ready to attack Albuquerque with a giant robot dinosaur? It's like, I've been waiting for this moment all of my life.
Well, I'm not saying that there's a lot of fire weapons in Kaiju Agogo, but those of you with nice countryside houses in the outskirts of Wellington may want to asbestos up. That's all I'm going to say. Because that forest burns really good.
So it's a game for pyromaniacs right at this moment. Very satisfying.
Did we talk about it last time? Or was I just talking in general to the team and all that? That as producery guy in general at Kerberos, as opposed to Aaron, who's the direct producer on the project, my brain has been kind of scattershot all over the place over the last few months while people were working on stuff. And it's been the last... a handful of weeks that I've dived back in more and more and more. And I knew early on that the core gameplay was working. Like, that's what we talked about last time. We took it to full indie. And even though it was the very basic proof of concept form all those months ago, people had loved stomping. That's all there was, but they loved stomping on the cities. And we were like up to I-beams and powers and training and the army's attacking you, and oh god, it's like they said, that core gameplay has expanded so much in the last few months, and it's still just a hoot.
I-beams, which are like pulsed heat vision right now.
They're your favorite now, I gather, because you've mentioned you've mentioned them a few times.
Well, because the pulsed heat vision thing is so dead sexy. There you go. This is for the people who always ask the questions about does anything change while you're working on the game. So here's a case in point: I-beams, as designed. They were supposed to be like a laser, in which they go straight forward, hit the first target in line, burn through it, continue on to the next. In one slow beam. Not slow, but... what we have going on now actually pulses its damage every quarter second, and it accepts targets in a slightly narrow arc. So what you now have is super pulse flash vision instead of a coherent single beam. And it's 50 times more awesome, so we're going to keep it that way.
So much more awesome.
Fire everywhere.
As we get close to release and then post-release, we'll probably talk directly to the game a lot more. Like I said, we're so deep in things, this is going to be a lot faster of a podcast. But one thing I think I will put in is I'll put a taste of Drew Redman's music that he's been working on for the game. That's a good thing for people to get a taste of, because we're trying to find that magic balance of, you know, the Godzilla soundtracks and all those classic 50s monster movie orchestrations and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, the one thing I will want to say right now, though, as we head into other things in this podcast, is the store pages will be going live soon on your various favorite digital download locations, Steam and Good Old Games, etc., and Gamersgate, not to be confused with Gamergate.
I feel really bad
for those guys.
Gamers.
My God, dude, this is the longest intro to a point in the history of mankind.
Wait, was I making a point?
Point being, store pages.
Well, yes, whatever your favorite is, they quite often have a I want this, remind me type button.
Press it.
We've never really talked people in advance about it, but
press the red shiny button.
I'm curious to see what the difference is between us just kind of hyping it at you and then, you know, you guys actually letting your store know you really want it in advance.
Press the button.
On Steam, put it on your wish list and stuff.
That's the one. Yes, Steam is wish list. Good Old Games has a watch function, etc.
Wish list me, please.
I don't know. Did you guys have anything particular about Kaiju? Because Kaiju's the big thing right now.
Are we allowed to talk about the super units yet?
You're allowed to talk about the up-and-coming in the next few days Defenders of the Earth campaign.
Defenders of the Earth. So, although you yourself are playing a supervillain with his pet robot dinosaur, which is, of course, the only rational point of view, the Earth apparently wishes to resist your domination and rule.
Mainly conservatives.
Yeah, you know, like, just think of it as, you know, the bad people who resist your plan, and they have their own like plans for kaiju like mega defenders.
Only after they see yours, they're copying.
Yeah, they're not you know, stunning, filled with creativity or anything. And yes, they are building. So secretly, as you are trying to conquer the world, they are studying your kaiju, and coming up with their own defense plan.
Anti-kaiju defenses.
I think eagle-eyed people may have seen hints of one here and there early on, like through the
start of the campaign.
Indiegogo campaign and all that. But yeah, we're going to reveal...
The first Defender of the Earth was already semi-visible and hinted at, but
this is more than a hint. Yes, other people read the Godzilla comic and Marvel will also get the idea.
We're getting Godzuki?
Godzuki. Godzuki was not in the Marvel Godzilla.
Isn't Katsuki in
not in Marvel Godzilla.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Is this going to turn into a Happy Meal bet?
Yes, I'm sure.
I bet you a Happy Meal?
The Red
Ronin. With a boy's toy.
The Red Ronin robot was in.
With a girl's toy?
That's true.
Yeah, Godzilla. Ronin,
yeah. I remember that.
Yep.
That was an awesome time to be reading Marvel, to
with
be honest.
A giant laser buckler.
Did ROM cross over into Godzilla Land?
No.
Or... Rom and Micronauts. Oh God! Why are we even plotting?
Okay, and just to wrap up some just a few more Kerberos things. I want to thank everybody who has been talking to me on social media about the re-release of Homeworld Remastered. Thank you. I especially appreciated people who screen capped the new credits. That was very nice of them to put Martin and I separately as our former identity and actually name our names since we stopped. We stopped writing together as Marcus Schuyler a long time ago. It was very nice that they updated those credits, and that's awesome. They did not use Montgomery Crabapple, which is a whole story in and of itself, which we will not tell now. But yeah, we're very much thank you for thinking of me. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the kind words about the old manual. No, we don't know anything about whether or not it will ever be possible for them to remaster and re-release Homeworld Cataclysm.
It's okay, we've been declared non-canon, we don't have to worry about it anymore.
I haven't heard, but yeah, well, I mean, there's always been that debate. The issue is just like, and no, I can't speak to the Homeworld 2 issue, so, like, we had nothing to do with that game. So we were only involved with Homeworld and Homeworld Cataclysm. But thank you very much for the comments. Yeah. It is always good to hear that, you know, the very first game that that I ever was able to work on at all is still well received and fondly remembered by people. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, two quick points is that A, where there's a will, there's a way. I mean, if Gearbox finds that the sales make sense or whatever, there's things they can do. I don't think there's any question that they can utilize the IP from that angle. The second one is, though, I know from talking to guys that are working on the remaster and all that, that their big thing was to integrate 1 and 2 in multiplayer terms. And the thing was...
Yeah, there were some gameplay changes, things like that.
So gameplay changes there to make those two inter... And the trick was, though, is that... And Martin and I addressed this in the... We mentioned last time the podcast, Space Game Junkies. We talked a bit about that. Our marching orders for Cataclysm was to keep it removed from the main universe or the main string of the games, which means then that... those a little bit more work would have to be done to integrate our fleet concepts into their multiplayer fleet concepts, I think.
Possibly. I don't know. As I said, I don't want to speak to that because it's obviously it's another company, it's their issues, it's their business issues, it's their tech issues.
The main thing is that everybody's everybody's very excited.
I thank people who reached out to me through social media to talk about the old work. That's awesome, and I really appreciate, like, you know, the people who sent screen caps of them pulling the old game off the shelf, or, you know, buying a vintage copy of it that's, you know, X number of years old and stuff. And that's awesome of you. And thank you.
Here's what's remarkable with the last couple of weeks.
I was going to say, it's old home week.
It's old home week because the idea that a game we worked on 12-ish years ago, 15 years ago,
long time,
would suddenly be, you know, brought up to speed and made available for a new generation of people as well as the old generation of gamers to try. That was kind of inconceivable at the time because those
games... 2 weeks ago was inconceivable.
Yeah.
Inconceivable.
And then, at the exact same time, for reasons I have reached out to try to find out and I'm still nobody... I can't find somebody who knows what the heck's going on. Disney reached into their vault and dragged out... Treasure Planet, Battle at Procyon.
Treasure Planet.
Inconceivable.
It's on Steam.
And put it on Steam. So if anybody would like to try the awesome My First RTS game.
Yeah. Well,
My First War game.
I didn't mention it because I'm not credited on it, but yeah, I do think Martin should probably address the reviews that are coming up on that game because they are actually, like, even for those of us who are not, like, directly involved in the design of it, they're actually very touching.
Yes, they set my heart cockles to warm. Yeah. They are awesome. It's very happy watching people. It's strange because, of course, it makes you feel old in the sense of it's all contained within the length of my career. But people on Steam talking about how a game that was very formative for them and very special to them as kids is now out again for them to buy as an adult.
They got in a Happy Meal. Or,
yep.
You know,
well, the demo was in the Happy Meal.
Buried in the Happy Meal. That was
like
the funny part. You had to be a minor hacker to pull that demo off the disc. Yeah. Otherwise, you were stuck playing this Flash game.
We were so happy.
Yep. No, well, what I like the best about it is that the comments show that my design and the team's development of it nailed the project perfectly. Disney came to us asking for Boy's First RTS. And that's what we gave them, and that's what people are talking about what they got, right? Their first game that they played where they could bandbox and drag and drop and right-click to attack and all the basics that would, you know, come in very handy for their grown-up gaming career, all in that first little package, all with the sights and sounds of a movie they liked. And, I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, it brings up a lot of the happy memories that are associated with working on that game, too. I mean, there were some happy memories, like laying in the placeholder for that game. And I remember, you know, when you got to work with the guy who played Silver.
Yeah.
Who was a great actor, and you guys had great chemistry together as actor and director. Just a lot of really good formative experiences associated with making a Treasure Planet. And
I remember Degrassi coming to work at Barking Dog as a tiny child.
Like I said, Degrassi, when he was just
he was just an artist left in swaddling clothes on the doorstep of Barking Dog Studios.
And just think of the titan that he has become.
I know.
For those who are not responding to the name, he's our lead technical artist here at the company. All grown up. The only downside to this whole thing was quite literally 36 hours the podcast went out in which they said, we like Treasure Planet. You'd think they'd put it up on Good Old Games or something. To which Martin and I said, what are the chances of that happening?
No, you said that. I never said it. I'm never wrong.
Fine, you're off the hook.
Yes, because Macron is never
wrong. Also have an airbrush out of a couple pictures.
So there was a 30-minute period where I had a panic that Disney was personally responding to my comment. But
that the Disney police would be arriving to punish us.
Well, nothing could be turned around in 36 hours, obviously. Somebody somewhere obviously. There's if we see and more Disney actually, games, we'll know there's a mandate to bring old games back.
If you look at the
back.
Package, they just shoveled everything from that era all together. Great.
Yeah, it's all re-released. I have had some people who asked, like, through social media in other contexts, like, what kind of shape the game is in, how much they've actually dug into it. And the answer is that I could hear from people who've bought it is it's LAN-only multiplayer. So
they took the game.
Yeah.
They took the code.
Yeah.
They just put it in there.
They handed over the...
They haven't adjusted its speed.
They haven't done anything.
Some people with fancy rigs are having trouble with their mice, stuff like that.
It's a very old game.
It's a very old game. It works fine with an old Microsoft mouse and your resolution not set to a trillion. But yeah, if you're on the bleeding edge with liquid helium cooling your machine, you're going to have hiccups.
I didn't look. Did they dig up the other ones of the period, like the Atlantis first person hugger?
Yeah. Oh my god, I'd forgotten that. But there's early Kingdom Hearts and stuff like that, right? Like it's a whole.
So it was a big initiative by Disney.
It's a whole pile of package.
Right. It's a slew of Disney stuff.
Disney Interactive.
Doesn't matter. We'll take it. It's really, really nice to see that stuff back.
Yeah, it's cozy. I bought a copy off of Steam.
And so does this bring up the topic of Mojo? Do we want to discuss
Mojo? Are we up on Mojo yet? Do we have any questions from people we'd like to answer first?
Of Kerberos-related questions?
Kerberos-related questions. Someone checked the message board lately?
No.
No.
We actually had a production meeting today, and I kind of forgot that. That's my bad. There was a few hanging from last time, and I think there was a couple of new ones. I will gather them up for the next one.
For next time.
We'll have a big Q&A session.
You're still important. You're still important. We'll answer your questions when Chris Stewart gets his act together. Hey.
It's like a bottomless well of atonal creativity. Let's just move this into general gaming.
General gaming. We have a short kind of...
Where's the song?
General gaming, these are things as if generals played games.
Why did I just demand it? What is wrong with me? Anyway.
You've got a problem.
Stockholm Syndrome.
That's right.
One half of me is like, format, and the other one is like, oh god, the songs.
Now, this is actually...
Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. This is actually kind of from the business section of things. Because this week, speaking of barge stuff, there was a charming individual wishing us well, and... wishing for more Sword of the Stars spaceship games and hoping that when we get our mojo back, so subtly put, that we would be able to get back to that.
So the very definition of damning with faint praise?
That's not as well as it is. The issue is that I thought that was an interesting comment and perspective about what people do in this industry and why they do it. Because I'm sure that sincere individual really thinks that the other games we're making are somehow me falling on hard times or not being able to make what I want or anything like that. Because lacking mojo, obviously a negative thing. But that brings to mind that people sometimes don't understand why you get into this industry. Everybody, I'm sure, has one perfect special game they have in their head. Just like everybody has one perfect song in their head and one perfect book in their head. But to do this job for a living is not about making your dream game. It's about making games, period.
It's about dreaming about making games.
Good turn of a phrase. I'm in this industry to make games. Over the past, 12 years? 15 years? Of actually being on the production side of things. 15.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I've made easily, about 15 different games and DLCs and expansions.
Yeah, I don't even have a count.
Yeah, and about half of those, a little less than half of those, are classic SOTs, which is great. And the other half aren't. And I'm really happy about that. This is my craft. This is what I do. I play a ton of games. I design games in my head. I love the fact that I've made 3 completely different games since SOTS 2 went to market, right? I'm thrilled that I've got another 2 completely different games on schedule for this year. This is my mojo. This is what keeps me coming back day after day and doing this abysmally hard work because it's licensed to be creative. We live in an industry where we tend to expect people to make the games we love, and then to just keep making them with minor iterations. And then ironically, we decry the fact that the industry is not very creative anymore.
Yeah, still to this day, it's been...
You may wish to stop punishing people for being creative if you would like to see more creativity.
Yeah,
it's right. Still, it's still to this day, if you talk to publishers, it's very hard to convince them to pick up a new IP.
Oh,
they
God,
always go back to the well.
Oh, yeah. If we
that
had,
they think, well, they know works and thinks will work
yeah,
forever.
Yeah, if we hadn't pushed Fort Zombie through ourselves, it never would have gotten picked up because it was like, no, you can't make zombies, you make spaceships. It's like...
And even well, and even then, it...
What, well,
it,
technically, I was in Cataclysm. I made zombie spaceships, so you can kiss my ass. But, yeah, the point being
don't
is that...
Don't stifle me.
That's right. It's very restrictive, especially under the publisher system. It's extremely constrictive.
And, but they take their cues from the marketplace, yeah, which is yeah. where they hear people going, yeah. why is it all the same? And then, it's yeah. different.
So yeah.
That's
so,
how you sound.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, I just thought I would correct that for people. If any of you, like, I, don't get me wrong, I gladly have the designs for another five SOTS games in my head. None of which are exactly the same as the original SOTS, so.
And nothing says we won't eventually get to them.
All right, so are we wrapping the Kerberos? Are we done?
It's kind of we've kind of started
yeah,
to lapse into
kind of
game.
Yeah.
This is we moved into the gaming industry as general, and that was a good place to start with it because it, yeah. while it was we were talking from the Kerberos perspective, it is about the gaming industry and game development as a whole, right? So, and speaking about the idea of Mojo, guess who got shut down? That was in the news.
Maxis. Austin Powers?
Maxis got shut down, right?
What?
So, yeah.
How? Doesn't what's his face have more money than God?
He does, but there's
apparently
the thing.
He took his money and went home.
See, there's the thing. There's somebody that got locked into I guess EA
yeah,
and
making
the
Sims
whole
forever.
Thing was make Sims and SimCity forever
yeah.
and then got tired of it and shut it down. And those guys prior to being picked up by EA, like the stuff they tried. Do you remember the Ant Sim one?
Yep,
like,
I remember Ant.
Yeah, they did exciting creative things.
I had the Earth Simulator. The Earth Simulator.
The Earth Simulator.
Awesome.
Yeah, and do you remember my favorite Maxis game? Because I talk about it all the time.
The Adventure of the Man with
No Pants. RoboSport.
RoboSport. Yeah.
Oh
RoboSport.
Yeah, that's early
that.
Days.
I think
right?
I reviewed that ages ago.
That was such a fun game.
Certainly, we played it.
We played it. It was my first. I sold a piece, a play-by-play piece on it.
Yeah.
Very early in things. That's when we had to set up Apple Talk on PCs to play networking stuff.
And I have to say, when it comes to any sort of tactical or strategy PC gaming, I mean, my PC gaming was quite limited compared to you guys. I was a bit of a Nintendo console kid at, you know, way back when. Not anymore, but that was my first taste of playing a game where it really lets you play with, you know, you were thinking in terms of numbers and tactics and strategy and line of sight and all that great stuff, right? Like, and mixing and matching to build your robots and just, oh.
Yeah, you don't get that now until you get the Synapse games are the only games now that really carry that.
Yeah, and the best part
about... Synapse football game we have to try, too.
Okay. The best part about playing RoboSport is I played it with my pal Chris and his brother and another friend of ours on his dad's Apple Macintosh, the classic Apple Mac. And, of course, there's no networking. So what it was is three of us would be sitting in the hall...
Hot-seating it.
Drinking Slurpees and reading comic books for 10 minutes while one guy made his turn and then swapped out
wow.
to someone else. With it. And we would do that for 5 hours.
Yep.
The ultimate hot seat experience.
Yeah. No, my Robo Rally is the, or Robo Sport was the PC networks with the Terminator that'd be at the end of the last computer in the network. And there was no way to tell a Terminator that worked from a Terminator that was dead. So there was no way to tell if the network was working or why or until you swapped them out like Christmas tree lights.
Yeah, there was a period of time where LAN parties weren't so much LAN parties as IT parties.
IT parties, yeah.
Oh, I loved it. Like,
and IT guys were magicians.
They used to bring all of their stuff over to the house
yeah.
and we'd try to set up Doom.
Yeah.
It was just like a day-long experience.
Well, yeah, because the first 4 hours was getting the network
they
working.
Totally.
And then 12 hours of playing Doom till you puked.
And it was like Bob and Troy and all
yeah.
of those guys
yeah.
coming over with just like heap,
yeah.
heaps of computer equipment. You know.
I remember
paying $180 for 2 more megs of RAM.
God, the pain.
So my Doom could cook right along.
I remember actually going back to Treasure Planet. I remember I took a build and went over to the Metro Town, whatever the hotel is there,
yeah.
for one of the last Necro Wombacon cons. proto-PAX, for anybody who remembers the term, and got to sit down with Jerry Tycho to show him the game, and got to talking with him. I'm like, I forget. It was nowhere near as huge as the thing is now, and especially the LAN party, but they had a LAN party of, I don't know, 50, 60 guys in one ballroom space. And I said, this is great. This is exciting. Look at everybody's playing. And he was kind of like, we've melted a couple of power bars and burnt out 8 routers.
Nice.
We are destroying so, equipment. Right,
we really need to find a night to play Treasure Planet online, by the way.
Yeah, I'd very much like that, actually.
Yeah, because they have various tunneling network pieces of software we could use.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we need to do that, because that was big fun.
That was a fun game, actually.
Also, not many designers use the point system anymore for coming up with multiplayer.
The command points, yeah.
No, it wasn't command points. They were just balance points, right?
Okay.
Remember how we set out
where
tanks would have been better off or more interesting to have a mode where... You know, a tiger is worth like 36 points, and a Sherman's worth 12.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
You could build away our secrets. And...
Not secrets.
It's not a secret. Like... It's available on Steam for $9.99.
I've lectured this theory at least 20 times over various guest lectures.
The idea that it didn't matter if you had one Uber ship or 10 little guys, they were balanced by their point value, and it was very exciting to mix up your sides that way.
Yep.
And actually, it was a very good way to bring in new people to the game, too, because we would just hand them one of the ironclads, which were very tough, and they only get the one, so they don't have to worry about multitasking. And then you run at them with your, you know, half a dozen ships or whatever. Let's do that.
Yes, we should.
Actually, let's hang up. Let's stop talking to these losers and go play it right now.
Forget these guys. Forget these guys. We have better things to do.
We have to go to play
football. I apologize for calling you losers. I got caught up in the moment. I'm Canadian. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. That was the big industry news, was Maxis. I was very sad to hear
that. Yeah, that is.
And there's also engine tech.
Oh, God. Yes.
Everybody's making their engines free.
GDC was a rush.
Well, it was a crazy arms race of who's...
Please, take this engine.
Who's freer than who?
Yeah. I'm free. No, I'm free. No, I'm freer than you.
I'm freer
than you. Freedom! Yeah.
I'm going in a time machine, and I'm bringing Fort Zombie forward in time to now.
Yes. Right?
Yeah.
All of this free engine tech. Where were you?
Where were you? Oh, they were there. Just the engines cost $1 million back then.
Where were you? Yeah.
And like the third-party middleware stuff, too. Like physics went out for free now. And
Unreal made it so that you can so you get the source code for some of the physics engine
stuff. Just crazy.
Yep.
That would have been nice for Fort Zombie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a brave new world.
Brave new world.
Yep.
I actually laughed. I posted on Twitter, too. I complained because the intern, he's not really an intern. I should stop calling him that. But
it's funny when you
do. He's the intern.
I got the intern. I renewed the subscription for Unreal because he wanted to play around with it. And 2 days later, they announced it was free. Now, they compensated by you can get free stuff out of their store and all that. But I went to Twitter to complain. That sandwich, you there on Epic Exec. That sandwich is on me.
That's right.
2 days before. I went, no, and... horribly exciting. Like that's
it's a brave
I'm excited. Are you excited?
And actually I'll tell you this. I stuck my head in at AI, our friend Jason Elliott, Martin Searless.
Yep.
He's got a new graduating class.
Yep.
Which I will not to belittle his previous classes, but this was a very strong graduating class.
Good.
And they're all Unreal heads. Like
for a brave new world.
Well, apparently Unity was the thing, right? We all remember Unity was big. Unity. And we couldn't quite figure out why, because it was good for some stuff and not for others, but it was always pushed as the universal do it.
Yeah.
And apparently this entire class went and touched Unity and went, I prefer Unreal. So this might be the golden age of Unreal in the next 5 years.
Well, let's just say this free race is going to be interesting.
Very interesting.
We'll see how long this lasts.
The next year is going to be interesting to see how those engines hit heads, especially with Valve.
Yeah.
They're Valve getting the source code out.
Which means a new Half-Life.
All these previous, like the last handful of E3s and GDCs, it was always a war between the console guys, waiting to announce whatever their big thing was. And this time, almost absolute silence from those guys.
Did anybody care what the consoles were doing this year?
No, not a peep. But this time, it was the exact same one-upmanship war, but from the middleware and third-party engine guys.
I guess the big test will be
E3. Yeah.
We'll see if the consoles can do anything that anybody cares about. Which would, again, be interesting if Valve would push something about their Steam box.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's...
I read a couple of articles in the last couple of weeks. A couple of their third-party partners took another stab at hardware, which is good, because the ones I saw a couple of years ago at the Steam meetup, some of them were very early production stuff and all
that. It seems to me that there's a shoe waiting to drop here soon. Right?
It's either going to take off or it's going
to... Yeah, there's a couple of shoes hanging in the air. One is, you know, after having been to the full Indie Summit, I can say that Valve is putting significant resources into their VR research, and that everybody is. And we have about 8 to 12 months before stuff starts coming out onto the market, and games and other products and apps that are going to use presence and VR goggles of various kinds are going to start hitting, and it's going to be...
Yeah.
It's not 1995 anymore, folks.
Going back to console...
It is better, and it is different.
Yeah, talking about console...
a different thing.
That was the only big thing that Microsoft pushed forward was their headpiece for the Xbox One.
Yeah, like I said, it's... They're going to try it, and we're going to see how it hits the wall.
I was going to say, it's going to be...
prepared for it.
It's going to be interesting if the cardinal rule of the industry is broken yet, which is... Which is no added-on piece of hardware to a console has ever made any difference. Right. The Wii kind of broke it with the motion handles to start with, but it shipped with those, right? That kind of made a wave. But the motion handles that were added to the other two consoles to catch up made no difference, right?
They had a real hard
Kinect makes them, no yeah. real difference, right?
And every, I think the, what did they call them? PlayStation Move or whatever?
Yeah.
The landing craft wands? Yeah. They almost evaporated in instant.
Yeah, exactly, right? It just for whatever reasons, right? So we shall see if they can introduce a piece of hardware midstream.
The balance to me is just about, you know, them recognizing certain realities about the economy in combination, right? Yeah. What holds back the explosion of a real peripheral revolution is that they're sitting in the middle of a crap economy. So although they have, you know, all of this money for research and development, and that they feel great about throwing at it and like, look, we've made this new thing, and it's like all of the people out in the world are like, look, you haven't arranged for me to make $500 to $600 more dollars a year.
Yeah, that's very true.
I'm not buying more crap. Just make me a game to distract me.
Yeah. You also haven't arranged
for a difficult life.
Yeah.
And it would actually go a long way to explaining to the Steam sale effect too, which is where people love to pick up lots of games cheap, right?
You know, if the economy picks up, the game market and the peripheral market can change, but it's not going to change until there's political change to underlie it, right?
But
if people have more disposable income, everything on the consumer end is going to be hampered by that.
It's so very true.
That's where the
balance
point is from my perspective.
Right. But it's also that the console makers have to pay more attention to software, right? My prediction is they come out with the peripheral. And that, what's the scary game about where you're working at the Chuck E. Cheese? Nighttime at...
Oh.
Fartman's? What's it called?
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Why are we stopping?
Because my voice is cut out.
We should probably...
I'll just interject then I haven't played anything. Has anybody else played anything?
It's
crunch time.
Just looking at
the answer is no. I haven't been playing anything. I've been working on
a
game.
I'm just looking at a game called The Room. It's a pad game.
I played that.
Yeah, I just thought I would bring it up that I had been. It's something I got a long time ago. I was just stuck on a bus for a bit, and I decided to play it for a while, and I thought it was really interesting. As I said, it was just been sitting on my pad. Sometimes you buy games and you don't get a chance to play them. I really liked it. I think it's kind of an interesting game. It's like a kind of a rebirth of the Myst genre, in the sense that it's a puzzle-based game with it's got that kind of move-through motion and animation.
Yeah.
I like it because I really have a weakness for old-timey scientific contraptions, right?
And it's Lovecraftian as old.
Let's
be honest.
I played it. I know exactly why you like it.
There's a little touch of the occult in it,
it's
also
porn.
Just
mad scientists and other dimensions and
madness.
Spoilers!
But it's just cool. Like, I love astrolabes and, you know, orreries and, you know, machines that model celestial mechanics and all kinds of that old stuff that goes, like, there was an era where every scientific instrument was a work of art that went pretty much from 1600 up until, you know, the mid-1800s. And after that, they started to just become machined, you know, mass-produced things. But during that era, you know, every scientific instrument was just often very much a thing of great beauty.
Yeah.
And it really captures that feel of just scientific instruments that are things of great beauty.
It's not a terribly expensive game. I would recommend it and its follow-up, like
Myst,
Room 2.
If you ever liked Myst or you've not, you're curious about the old genre and how it's been, you know, reborn with these new, the new, you know, graphic interfaces and user controls, yeah, definitely try it, right? It is interesting. Yeah,
don't skip to Room 2. Start with Room 1.
Yep. No, definitely
and
start
room
with
Room 1. And Room 1 lets you play through the first handful of puzzles before you're given the chance to play. I believe you start in a bedroom, and when you escape it, you're then offered the opportunity to... But
it's pretty much just the room. That's all I have, anyway.
You may have to pay up, then. There's more!
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, like I said, it's very cool. I've been enjoying it. It's a simple game. I did buy it, so... But I don't know. Maybe I have a previous version.
I've been old-schooling as well, playing Rise of Nations. Ah. And a little Company Heroes 2, which isn't quite as old-school. Fun to do the old school RTS thing, lots of neat ideas in there. Still fun to play.
Cool.
That's
about it.
Pop culture time.
Pop culture time. We're doing the pop culture thing. We watch stuff and listen to stuff and maybe draw stuff.
Here we go. Okay. Just get the one big sigh. One
just,
big
just
sigh.
One.
For the...
Just one.
Apocalicious. Because you recommended to me a show.
The Crazy Kimmy Show?
Kimmy Schmidt. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Which is like, what would you call it?
It's crazy.
30 Rock Light?
It's 30 Rock Crazy, right? It's 30 Rock Super New York Crazy. They don't have to worry anymore about producers going, people in the Midwest won't get that joke.
No.
They don't care anymore.
What if all the people from Blast for the Past were evil idiots?
And lived in New York.
And went to live in New York afterwards.
There's an entire joke sequence about how many Spider-Man musical are Broadway, how many Spider-Men are in the Spider-Man musicals. Because obviously that's the gimmick for the third or fourth one there's been. That's a fairly obscure New York joke.
I enjoyed it. I watched the first three. The comedian who's in it is very funny. I ran into her in kind of her rise because she was on... A Funny or Die clip, which was called The Worst Blowjob in the World.
God.
So it's just a point of view of her offering her boyfriend, excitedly offering her boyfriend a blowjob, to which she starts going, are you ready? He's like, yeah. And she's like, he's like, whoa, what's that? Like, it's just, and it just goes from there. So that she has a starring role in something I'm actually very happy with. I'm always happy to see Carol Kane. I love Carol Kane.
Big resurrection of career year for her between Gotham and this.
Yeah, what was her thing too about Honey, Don't Wear Yellow? The Crips will think you're part of the Banana Boys.
There's no good colors left. No, her favorite line is Kimmy goes, and my heels are sticking into the floor. Oh, honey, that's a real floor. It's not just dirt painted.
The one thing that I know, that always gets me about that show is they have the best lit basement suite in New York.
Oh my god, yeah.
Like that is like second floor lighting in a basement suite apartment.
Yeah.
You probably haven't watched it yet, but it came up because I recommended Last Man on Earth.
I watched
it. It is quite literally a guy. It's Omega Man as a comedy.
Oh, right.
That's basically what it comes down to. It opens with him.
Interesting subject for a comedy.
Here's how they introduce the premise of the show in the first episode. It opens with a bus, like a touring bus, driving around, and you hear him going, hello. Hola. Hello in Chinese. Like he's just driving around through these cities empty, and then every once in a while cuts to him and a map just crossing out the states. And ends with him at, like, Utah. Last one. Crosses it out. Pause. Ah! Like, just freaks out in a bus filled with sports memorabilia and stuff that nobody owns anymore, so he's just lifted and loaded it into his bus.
The Stanley Cup.
And,
you know, like,
and both these shows, here's the crazy part, not only are they have an apocalypse touch, both of them are on demand. Kimmy Schmidt is a Netflix series,
yep.
And Last Man on Earth is Amazon.
Oh, speaking of things on demand,
yes.
Movie, Parallels.
Yeah, it's on my list.
Yeah,
it's on my Netflix list.
Netflix.
Is it good?
It's really. It's
on my list, which means I haven't seen it.
I thought it was very clever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was basically a Fox Online project, which they're kind of using as a pilot, and then decided to release to Netflix just as a movie, and hopefully, everybody should watch it and then react to it, and hopefully, it'll be a series because we need a new Sliders.
House of Cards just started up.
Yeah.
Community on Yahoo is about to start up.
Yeah.
Daredevil's dropping in just a few weeks' time on Netflix.
Really?
But, it's coming up real quick.
So much hard work going on.
Yeah.
And it's all on demand. Like, I'm trying to think now.
It's streaming.
Boy, that model, because I remember 2 years ago when House of Cards started, we went, this is exciting. I wonder where the model will
go. Watch a Parallels movie. It's really cool.
Watch Parallels.
I will. Thank you. Are you talking to me or them?
Everyone. We're just talking.
Can I go home and watch it?
Yes.
Excellent. Go home and watch not that we've been watching a lot, because it's crunch time.
Crunch time.
Wink, wink.
I have my desk is facing the TV late at night. So
I work all night. You multitask?
Yep.
Excellent.
I read a couple of novels over the last couple weeks during my off time.
Oh,
I got
so lucky.
I read Gone Girl.
A luxury of time.
Gillian Flynn. I don't know how to pronounce her name. I'm sorry. If it's Gillian, I apologize.
How was Gone Girl?
It was by far, I'm sure that it is the most horrifying novel that I will read this year.
My Significant Other was taken with that book
too. Yeah, it is a horrifying novel. Like, it's just absolutely, it really bothered me at a variety of levels. And it's an excellent novel to subvert your expectations. If you're good at analyzing fiction and the tropes of fiction and the forms of fiction, it will mess with you, so... enjoy that. It's very well written, and the characters are quite engaging, and the problems in it are quite interesting. The only book I have read, let's put it this way, it's the only book I've read in the last 5 years that did not contain a spaceship or a vampire, per se, that I actually enjoyed and thought was good. So that tells you something
about
where...
Vampire spaceship.
She belongs to Columbia House's vampire spaceship book club.
Totally, like as I said, this is very often, this will always be my answer to you if you ask me, have you read X? Or did you see X? And I will tell you, that does not sound as if it has a vampire or a spaceship in it.
50 Shades of Vampire spaceships.
If there is not a vampire or a spaceship in it, I probably have not seen/read
it. What if there's just a tool? Could it be a space tool?
The best line is...
The sparkly douchebag? Doesn't quite cover it.
Was Weekly Wipe is back on with Charlie Brooker.
Ooh, cool. People should watch that.
And he reviewed, he did his little synopsis of 50 Shades of Grey, to which he's like, and Christian Grey, who's got his kinky sex room, which is filled with everything that you can hurt somebody with or shove up their arse. And pause. Which describes every room, now that I think about it.
Really? Well, yeah.
The best summation I saw was somebody did a meme picture of Christian Grey going, I can make your every sexual fantasy come to life. And then underneath is Dr. Frankenfurter. Bitch, please.
Yeah. Make me a man.
My favorite one was on the web a year ago, the 50 Shades of Power Tools.
No. So
she said, my wife said, hurt me. I want to feel pain. So I said, okay, and threw Legos on the floor.
The other book I read was Stephen King's Mr. Mercedes, which I don't know.
I'm not familiar with that one.
On behalf of the blonde female character, I'm filing a restraining order, Steve. You have to stop killing her. Leave her alone. I don't know who she represents or what she's doing in your books, but please stop writing her into every book and then horribly killing her. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, you, Peanut Gallery. Shut up. Yeah, this short episode went longer than we thought. So let's just wrap it up and save stuff for next time.
Actually, we should wrap it up with a moment of silence for Terry Pratchett.
Hand on heart for Terry Pratchett.
Goodbye, Mr. Pratchett.
Yeah, that actually, to give people a context, that happened just this morning. So that's the talk of the day right now, is that. And it's actually one of those more bittersweet passings. It was not unsurprising.
There was some word out about his illness. So.
And he wasn't, he was slightly on the younger side. He didn't have a full run, but by no means was he taken too early. And certainly his number of books, holy crap, does anybody have a count?
He will be missed by many people, particularly our artist John.
John was a big fan.
Yeah, John Yakimo.
Goodbye, Mr. Pratchett.
Goodbye, Mr. Pratchett.
I have a very big soft spot in my heart for Good Omens, for all of his footnotes there.
Yep.
Well, all of his books, to be honest, but...
Lot of big powers passing.
Yeah.
In terms of genre stuff lately.
And shall we wrap it there?
Yes, I think we
should. Yes, on a down note. Yes.
On a down note, sorry guys. There'll be no singing. But we did, you know, it is kind of a sad thing for those of us who love a little humor in our fiction.
Yeah. I was just reading his Long Earth books with Benford.
Yeah. So, you know, head to your bookstore.
Yeah.
Pick up a copy. If you haven't read him, now's the time. Life. And if you have read him, time to pull off the shelf and reread.
Yep.
All right, everybody. We're going back into crunch time, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Follow us on our social medias, Facebook, Kerberos Productions, and Twitter, at SoulForce. And, of course, our message boards at kerberos-productions.com. And we are now out on iTunes, which means if you're not following us on Podomatic, you can subscribe on iTunes there.
Yay, iTunes.
If you're on iTunes, go drop a review. Because, to be honest, we're mostly talking directly to you. This is not about a numbers thing. But, of course, the more we can introduce more people to the stuff we're working on, the better. The more
people we can offend.
That's one and way reach. Of looking at it.
And reach.
iTunes works on an algorithm mostly based off of people paying attention. So it's not just downloads, it's reviews and interactions and shares and all that. So
please review it.
So go drop us a line. Actually, it doesn't even matter what you say. Just go drop something. And and we'll see you in 2 weeks. All right.
See you in 2 weeks, everybody.
For me, Chris Stewart.
Me, Martin Serlis.
And me, Aaron Dembo.
All right.
Bye.
Have a good one.